A grandmother's embrace tells a story beyond affection. Her hands, weathered by survival, secretly measure whether her grandson has eaten enough, a gesture born from starvation during the Holocaust, when she once refused pork even to save her life. If nothing matters, there's nothing to save, she insisted, defining herself through what she wouldn't consume. Her simple chicken with carrots became legendary in the family, not for its flavor, but for what it represented. Terror transformed into tenderness, deprivation into generosity. Food became their shared language, perhaps easier to speak than trauma itself. This same tension between what we eat and who we are confronts us each time we sit down to a meal. For years, vegetarianism came and went like a New Year's resolution. At 9, the revelation was simple. Chicken is chicken. The commitment lasted until it didn't, through college, marriage, honeymoons, whenever convenience whispered louder than conscience. Then came the ultrasound image, the nursery preparations, the sudden weight of teaching someone else how to live. When his son emerged and immediately began nursing, that wordless hunger connected them across generations to every ancestor who ever fed a child. Feeding became more than nutrition. It became inheritance, the passing down of stories through what we choose to put on the plate. What began as research for his son's future became an investigation into something larger. Where does meat actually come from, and what does our answer say about the world we're creating? Adopting George, a tiny black puppy, shattered 26 years of indifference toward dogs. Suddenly, here was a creature with transparent emotions and mysterious depths. Their relationship forced an uncomfortable question. If this dog deserves protection, what about the pig, equally intelligent and emotionally complex? We've constructed arbitrary categories that collapse under scrutiny. Dogs are companions, but so are pigs in cultures where they're not eaten. Dogs are intelligent, but pigs score higher on cognitive tests. The evolutionary argument fails. Dog meat has been consumed throughout history. Meanwhile, fish occupy the opposite end of our moral consideration. Distant, silent, their suffering invisible. We wouldn't tolerate someone swinging a pickaxe at a dog's face, yet similar violence toward fish barely registers. The word fish itself obscures individuality, encompassing 31,000 distinct species. In 1789, naturalist Gilbert White documented a female pig who would methodically unlock her pen, navigate multiple gates, visit a male pig at a distant farm, and return home, repeatedly. Fish intelligence research has exploded, from 70 peer-reviewed papers in 1992 to over 640 today, documenting architectural skill, monogamous relationships, tool use, and recognition of dozens of individuals. Standing before seahorses in Berlin's aquarium, strange creatures that change color, mate monogamously under full moons, males becoming pregnant, the shame arrives. If more intelligent beings regarded us as we regard fish, what argument could we offer? For every 10 large predatory fish 50 years ago, only one remains. Scientists predict total collapse of all fished species within 50 years. University of British Columbia researchers call our approach wars of extermination. Factory vessels use GPS, sonar, and heat sensors to deploy 1.4 billion hooks annually and nets stretching 30 miles. Factory farming houses tens of thousands of genetically engineered animals with restricted mobility, externalizing environmental destruction and suffering. Wild roosters once defended mates while hens communicated with unhatched chicks, responding to distress peeps by shifting weight, a protective image used in Genesis and by Jesus as a metaphor for love. Industrial slaughterhouses emerging in 1820s Cincinnati and Chicago killed the millennia-old eat-with-care ethic, replacing skilled butchers with assembly lines. Henry Ford acknowledged these efficiencies inspired his auto manufacturing. Putting together a car is just taking apart a cow in reverse. In 1923, Celia Steele accidentally received 500 chicks instead of 50. Keeping them indoors launched modern poultry farming. By 1935, she had 250,000 birds, transforming animals into creatures incapable of surviving naturally. Words like veal help us forget we're discussing baby cows. Free range misleads conscientious consumers. Natural means almost nothing. The typical egg-laying hen occupies 67 square inches, less space than a single sheet of paper, in wire cages stacked 9 tiers high inside windowless sheds. Picture being trapped in an overcrowded elevator with a wire floor cutting into your feet, held aloft by neighbors with no escape. Eventually, some turn violent, others go mad, a few become cannibalistic. Modern agriculture has split chickens into two types: layers for eggs, broilers for meat. Male layer chicks serve no function, so all 250 million born annually in the U.S. are destroyed, suffocated, electrocuted, or sent conscious through macerators. The free-range label offers little comfort. For meat chickens, it requires only access to outdoors, which might mean a tiny door rarely opened for 30,000 birds. Inside typical sheds housing 25,000 birds each, nothing natural exists. No earth, no windows, just artificial light. Despite livestock contributing 18% of greenhouse gas emissions, more than all transportation combined, environmentalists rarely address farmed animals. In 1997, the first human deaths from H5N1 bird flu occurred, the same year scientist Johan Hultén excavated 1918 flu victims. That pandemic killed up to 100 million people in 24 weeks, more than AIDS killed in 24 years. All human influenza strains derive from migrating aquatic birds, with danger emerging when viruses cross species barriers through pigs. Industrial chicken farms house 33,000 birds in windowless sheds with only 0.8 square feet per bird. Modern broilers grow so unnaturally fast that 1-4% die from sudden death syndrome, 75% develop walking impairments, and 25% experience significant pain. These conditions create disease factories. 95% become infected with E. coli, 70-90% with Campylobacter. The American Dietetic Association confirms well-planned vegetarian diets are appropriate for all life stages and associated with lower disease rates. If India and China matched America's poultry consumption, they alone would consume as many chickens as the entire world does today, a terrifying prospect for antibiotic resistance and pandemics. Yet 96% of Americans believe animals deserve legal protection, with 76% prioritizing animal welfare over lower meat prices. Nothing in our daily choices has greater potential to cause suffering or environmental impact than meat consumption. Frank Reese raises heritage turkeys that fly, mate naturally, and thrive outdoors, birds he describes as curious, playful, friendly, and full of life. This contrasts sharply with industrial turkeys that cannot walk, fly, or reproduce without artificial insemination. Paul Willis's pig farming lets pigs be pigs, earth instead of concrete, outdoor access, deep bedding for rooting. Nyman Ranch prohibits routine antibiotics, avoids waste lagoons, and requires independent auditing. Yet these alternatives struggle financially. When Frank's last acceptable slaughterhouse closed, he faced potential ruin. See, the Activist Guide investigated farms hoping to find cruelty exceptional. Farm after farm revealed identical conditions. After 3 years, her commitment became clear: factory farming cannot be participated in. Yet she gained deep respect for sustainable farmers, giving animals good lives before humane death. Despite industry claims of radicalism, ranchers can be vegetarians, and vegans can support ethical animal agriculture. But we shouldn't delude ourselves. There isn't enough non-factory chicken for Staten Island, nor enough non-factory pork for New York City. Ethical meat remains more promise than reality. Thanksgiving represents the meal we aspire for others to resemble: deliberate, thoughtful, good. With Native American help, early colonists became self-sustaining, making Thanksgiving America's founding act of conscientious consumption. Yet the 45 million turkeys on our tables are unhealthy, unhappy, and unloved. Our response to factory farming tests how we treat the powerless and voiceless. His grandmother, who refused pork even while starving, understood something profound. Our choices in moments of convenience reveal who we are in moments that matter. Each meal is a small decision that accumulates into the story we tell about ourselves. The question isn't whether we can survive without examining where our food comes from. We can. The question is whether we can live with ourselves if we don't. What we choose to eat becomes the inheritance we leave to our children. Nothing in our daily choices has greater potential to cause suffering or environmental impact, yet nothing inspires shame like parenthood when children confront us with our contradictions.